From the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., this is Update One, the club's official podcast. It features newsworthy stories originating from the NPC facilities, as well as broader topics related to journalism, communications, press freedom, and transparency.
I'm Tom Young with the Broadcast Podcast Committee of the National Press Club. The legal pushback against the Trump administration's efforts to silence Voice of America seems to be gaining traction. Earlier this year, President Trump issued an executive order for the U.S. Agency for Global Media to be eliminated to the maximum extent consistent with law. That also defunds Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and Radio Free Asia, along with other outlets. But federal judges have said not so fast. Voice of America chief national correspondent Steve Herman is one of hundreds of VOA journalists effectively fired by the Trump administration. Steve joins me in the studio today. He has reported from around the world and serves on the Press Club's Board of Governors. Full disclosure, he and I worked together at the broadcast division of the Associated Press years ago. Thanks for joining us, Steve.
It's a pleasure to be here, Tom, except not under these exact circumstances.
I can imagine. To begin with, we should mention we're recording this podcast on April 4, 2025. By the time the audience hears this, things could have changed. Steve, you filed a petition in support of the legal action, and you've called the situation a constitutional emergency. Tell us about that.
Yes, it's one of about five legal actions currently against our parent agency, the U.S. Agency for Global Media. And the actual lawsuit, the preliminary statement, starts out calling this a constitutional emergency because journalists are being silenced and broadcasts have been turned off. And that is why it is a First Amendment constitutional emergency, we believe.
VOA has or had a unique mandate under the law. Can you describe that for us?
Yes. The purpose of the Voice of America is essentially to tell America's story. But in telling that story, we are to reflect all major thoughts and institutions in the United States, not those only of the party that happens to be in the White House or in Congress, but to present a balanced projection of the United States, which makes us a bit unique for state-funded broadcasters in the world. But it's been that message of telling America's story, warts and all, that has had a very significant impact on our listeners and viewers over the decades and really exemplifies what the free press in the United States is all about.
I believe you've said not only has Congress mandated VOA operations, but lawmakers have required expanded services.
Yes, and that's a major thing to point out, and I'm glad you did, is even though we are seeing the executive branch silencing the Voice of America, our broadcasts are mandated by the legislative branch, by Congress, which not only mandates certain types of broadcasts, and if there's a problem, there could be a congressional hearing on something, but also the money. These are appropriated funds. And there has been special emphasis on places such as North Korea and Iran and Russia, Eastern Europe as well. And there are supposed to be arguably broadcasts that are to continue without interruption, targeting both Iran and North Korea.
Speaking of VOA and the law, aren't there supposed to be firewalls that protect VOA from political interference?
Yes. A lot of strengthening of the laws that protect the autonomy of the Voice of America came into effect in the Ford administration. And there is a firewall that prevents interference in our journalism from even our parent agency, U.S. Agency for Global Media, or any other part of the government. And that, you know, that can be sort of difficult for some people to understand because they're saying, hey, you know, the government's paying for it. Shouldn't the government be dictating what's on the Voice of America? And the answer to that, which again was something that Congress passed, is that no, it needs a certain amount of autonomy. I can tell you, Tom, when I write a TV script or a radio report or something for the web, it goes through at least two editors. And then if it touches on anything politics, there's a third editor, a balance editor, to make sure that it, you know, we have both sides of the story evenly reflected. And if we were to start slanting our reporting one way or the other politically, that would be violating the oath that we took. We took as federal employees, I'm a Foreign Service officer, not under the State Department, but under Voice of America, we would be violating that oath that we swore allegiance to the Constitution, not to a political party and not to a president.
Any thoughts on what could be the motivation for shutting down VOA?
Now, I'll leave that up to other people who are writing lots of copy about that. We have not had an explanation from anybody directly to the staff of the Voice of America. A few days after our contracts for the wire services, AP and Reuters and AFP were cut off, then everybody and everything was cut off without any explanation, just everybody sort of put on paid leave indefinitely, which, as we speak, is the situation that remains.
And what was the reaction to all this around the world? I understand Russian and Chinese state media were pretty happy.
It's not only state media that were pretty happy, but the leaders in Moscow and Beijing as well. And I think that demonstrates the effectiveness of the Voice of America and U.S. international broadcasting. You know, some people say it's archaic and it doesn't have an impact. Well, if it did not, why would they be cheering our demise? And one thing I can tell you that's been pretty consistent over the decades, dictators and autocrats have always wanted to see the Voice of America shut down. The first transmissions were from just north of Cincinnati in Ohio. At a facility that Powell Crosley built very quickly in the early days of World War II to beam broadcasts to Germany in German. And Hitler was paying attention and referred to the broadcasts as those Cincinnati liars.
If I can use a military metaphor, what does the VOA shutdown do to the battle space and the battle for messaging and the battle for hearts and minds?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'm a bit of a scholar of public diplomacy, and I've heard it said that the Voice of America is the best bang for our buck in terms of soft power. Hard power, of course, is dropping bombs and things like that. Well, we're not kinetic in that sense. We drop truth bombs. And by putting out good messaging accurately and quickly into an area, whether there's a war going on or civil conflict, a natural disaster, a man-made disaster, or an epidemic, We're filling a void, and we're combating potential misinformation and disinformation. And I'm sure you know from your experiences overseas, if there's a vacuum of information when there's a crisis, rumors can start to take off, and a lot of bad things can happen. And in a lot of places that we broadcast to, we are the only credible source of information in that particular language or into that particular country. And with our voices going silence, that void is going to be filled and is starting to be filled by the voices of Moscow and the voices of Beijing and perhaps Tehran and Pyongyang as well.
You've said the dead air and music loops on VOA now remind you of things you've seen in other countries. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, in fact, there's just an example that I read today of what I had feared was happening. Came out of Nigeria, where people were trying to contact reporters there for the Voice of America. We have a very impressive Hausa language service. And when the broadcast stopped or the videotape loop with music came on, they wondered if there had been a coup d'etat in the United States.
Wow.
And, you know, that's what happens when I've been in countries where all of a sudden the programming stops and music comes on unscheduled. And indeed, there had been a military coup. And we have not been able to give an explanation to our audiences about what happened. The broadcast just disappeared literally overnight with no explanation coming from the United States.
Wow. Wow. I understand some of your colleagues come from places like Afghanistan, China, Russia, and Iran. There have been reports that authoritarian regimes have issued warrants for the arrest of AGM staffers. Are those staffers in danger of being sent back?
Yes, they are, because they're here on what are called J-1 visas. Most of the staffers at the Voice of America are U.S. citizens and green card holders. And like any federally funded positions like this, the priority is given to people qualified to work in the United States. But sometimes for some of these language services, it's not like a broadcaster in that particular language hanging around on every street corner. And we want to try to recruit the best. So for some of them, there are visas that are given to them so that they can be broadcasters and reporters on the Voice of America. And if they don't have a job anymore, they're going to have to leave the country because they don't have a sponsor for the visa any longer. And there are a number of them who potentially face going back to countries where there's a target on them, that they've already been named because of their broadcasts as an enemy of that particular country, where we fear that they're going to be persecuted, put in prison, or even worse. And I think that's one of our top priorities among my colleagues and our team of dozens and dozens of lawyers right now, is to ensure that none of these journalists who have worked on behalf of the United States are put in harm's way.
Well, speaking of staffers in harm's way, according to Reporters Without Borders, there are several AGM journalists who are in prison now in Azerbaijan, Belarus, Myanmar, Russia, and Vietnam. Where does all this leave them?
Yeah, it's a great question. I sure hope it doesn't put them in a worse situation than they already are. It's one thing that these governments are holding them, knowing that these journalists were working for broadcasters like Radio Free Europe, Radio Free Asia, and the Voice of America. And in the past, tremendous diplomatic pressure has been applied, along with support from a number of major journalist organizations around the world, such as the Committee to Protect Journalists, Reporters Without Borders. And you have to wonder if these journalists are being seen as being abandoned by the U.S. government, does it make it harder to free them?
Voice of America has a storied history. You touched on this earlier, but it first went on the air in 1942 to counter Nazi propaganda. Tell us a little more about the role of VOA through the decades.
Yes. Well, at the end of World War II, obviously German and Japanese had been major languages for us. There were those on Capitol Hill who thought, no, we should just shut the thing down. The government should not be in the broadcasting business. And of course, many of them did not want a government broadcaster broadcasting to Americans. So there was a compromise worked out where the Voice of America would continue because it was the start of the Cold War. And there was the propaganda, of course, coming out of the Soviet Union and later China. And our messaging and our programs would go behind the Iron Curtain and also to other underdeveloped parts of the world, or places that did not have a free press. And the language has changed depending on world circumstances. We're currently at 48 languages, or were as of the middle of March, plus English and learning English. So it's absolutely critical to get these broadcasts back on the air, because they have continued without interruption until the middle of March for 83 years. And I have met people who have said that they learned English from listening to the Voice of America. It was called Special English, started in 1959, now called Learning English. And also that they learned about free press and freedom and civil rights and human rights from listening to the programs of the Voice of America, and that VOA was not only telling them accurately what was going on in the United States, but in many cases, what was really happening in their own country. And they could look around with their own eyes and ears and see that what we were telling them was accurate, which enhanced credibility. And we know that most of the leaders in Eastern Europe, who were those who came to the forefront of the democracy movement, were very loyal listeners during the Cold War to the Voice of America and Radio Free Europe.
Steve, you were sidelined ahead of many of your colleagues. Is it fair to say the administration targeted you by name?
Yeah, I think that's fair. We ran into a situation at the end of the first Trump administration when political appointees were targeting me and others. And both myself and my successor as White House bureau chief, Patsy Widakuswara, seemed to have a target on our back shortly after the election. You know, and we were talking a bit about that before the middle of March, but although it was concerning, I knew I wasn't indispensable, right? If I left the Voice of America, or they found a way to get rid of me and Patsy, yes, that was it was pretty personal. But the real sock in the gut came in the middle of March when all 1,350 of my colleagues were told that they could no longer report or go to the office, do any work, and the transmitters and satellite transponders were switched off.
I can imagine. Getting back to the legal action we discussed at the top of the program, what needs to happen next? Let's say in the best case scenario, what would it take to put VOA back on the air with anchors in the studios and reporters in the field?
Yeah, we'd really love to see that, Tom. We have a temporary restraining order from a judge in New York that basically froze everything in place. So they couldn't go ahead with terminating our contractors out of that 1,350 I mentioned. About 550 are contractors, which were to lose their jobs at the end of March. But what has happened so far with the judicial decisions does not put us back on the air. The next step is to get a preliminary injunction. All of these cases where USAGM are defendants are now going to be held here in Washington, D.C., and we would hope that there would be some judicial rulings that not only allow VOA to get back on the air, but also Radio Free Europe and Radio Free Asia. We also have the Middle East Broadcasting Networks, which are also grantees. That's Radio Sawa and Al Hurra Television, which broadcasts to the Middle East in Arabic. The Office of Cuba Broadcasting, which is 100% part of the federal government, is partially back on the air. The AM radio transmissions to Cuba have resumed out of the Florida Keys, but the shortwave transmitter has not been switched back on.
Speaking of bringing these services back, there's action outside the courtroom, too. Tell us about the Save VOA campaign, or maybe I should say hashtag Save VOA.
Right. So there's a social media campaign that has started in recent days. We have organized groups of VOA journalists and other staffers into different committees online to get a lot of different things done, from providing support for the J-1 visa holders to downloading all of our archives off the website in case that gets switched off, voanews.com, which I encourage people, as long as it's online, to go look at our stories if you think that we have any sort of ideological bent. And so we have a group which is working on social media awareness because, Tom, even though we don't broadcast to the United States, American citizens are not our target audience. The American people are our stakeholders. It is your tax dollars that have been paying for this, less than the cost of two fighter jets per year. And again, that's why I think it's a pretty good bang for the buck. And we need to increase awareness among Americans about what VOA is or was. And that's why I'm here today and making all of these media appearances, mainly for domestic audiences, to let Americans know the history of Voice of America, what our mission is, how unique it is, and what has happened, that it has been shut down, which we contend is an illegal act, which is why we've gone to court.
Well, thanks for your time, Steve. We certainly wish you and your colleagues all the best. We've been talking with Voice of America Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman, now locked out of his job at VOA. Steve is also a member of the National Press Club's Board of Governors. I'm Tom Young, reporting for Update One from the National Press Club in Washington.
You have been listening to Update One, the official podcast of the National Press Club, the world's leading professional organization for journalists and a vigorous advocate of press freedom worldwide. If you have any questions or comments about Update One, send an email to updateonepodcast@gmail.com.